This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Good guest today, as always. We got my partner, Wes Durham, down there in the great state of Georgia. What's going on there, man? You doing all right?
I'm great. Good to be with you this morning. You're right. Brian O'Connor going to join us here shortly. Today is the fifth anniversary of Virginia's College World Series National Championship out in Omaha, Nebraska. Look forward to visiting with Brian O'Connor. Patrick Bailey, a first-round pick a couple of weeks ago of Mark Packer's San Francisco Giants, will join us. And Andrea Adelson, also to spend some time with us, fresh off her quarantine confessional yesterday. So we're looking forward to that. And your calls at 844-SAY-ACC and his packs. What show number is this, by the way? I've lost track again.
It's easy. It's 157.
All right. 157. All right. Everything else is pretty good. Hope you had a good day, and looking forward to a really good show here today.
Yeah, the show will be good. We got some topics to get into, and Wes, I don't know about you, but how often does somebody come up to you or send you a note or a phone call and says, hey, man, a fan's going to show up for football this year? I mean, I'm hoping we're going to have college football, but are we going to be able to go to a game? And we've had a couple calls already this week on this show. I get bombarded in the afternoon with it. If you walk down the street, if you go to the grocery store or restaurant, whatever, I mean, it's nonstop. Hey, Pack, are we going to games this year? I don't know. I'm just going to tell you right now, and I'm not sure anybody right now truly knows the answer to that question.
Well, I was asked three times yesterday the exact question, hey, do you think we're going to be able to go to games this year? And we're starting to see, in a variety of different reports have come out. Ken Segura in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution last night, citing a video teleconference of the Georgia Tech Athletic Association Board where Todd Stansberry said they want to be able to have full capacity, but they're also prepared for three other models, one that is restricted, one that is severely restricted, and then one where there's no fans at all. And I don't think that anybody should be surprised by that. Packett also coincides with an interesting story regarding the National Football League. And there's so many of us, I think, that think the NFL could lead the way on this. Another story released yesterday about the NFL citing a memo that the NFL may, in fact, defer to whatever particular rules and regulations are in that state at the time of the game. And I think that's fascinating as well. So, you know, we're going to see a lot of different things happen. And, yes, this is a story in June that probably is a better story in August. But I would tell you, I think it's fascinating to hear, because I do believe the NFL is going to show a little bit of the process and procedure on this. I think it's interesting that we may go back to deferring to states. And in some ways, that might be the default until we get closer to the actual kickoff of the college football season or the NFL, however the calendar may fall here.
I do think the states are going to dictate some policy here, Wes, because let's be honest, even within the ACC footprint, which we have mentioned many times, including the commissioner on this show, there are 10 states represented in the ACC footprint. And if you went down to Florida today, it would look probably different than it does in New York versus Indiana versus Kentucky versus the Carolinas, Georgia, Virginia, et cetera, et cetera. And who knows what the temperature of the, in the lay of the land is going to look like in August. I mean, we're sitting here having a conversation on June 24th trying to predict what we think of the late August and early September is going to look like. It's impossible. You cannot do it. So to see Todd Stansberry basically lay out four scenarios, and I would be willing to bet you at other schools that there may be more than just four scenarios. I think everybody right now has kind of got head on swivel saying, hey, we've got to be prepared for anything moving forward. And we don't even know what this whole COVID-19 pandemic is going to look like in terms of testing week to week with each program, much less what we think 2 months is going to look like. So I think you're probably right. I don't think this is going to be necessarily a decision made by an institution that says, hey, we're good to go. You know, what may work at University of North Carolina may not work at Wake Forest. You know, what works at Virginia Tech may not work at Virginia. What works at Miami may not work at Florida State. It's too impossible to even try to conjure up a prediction on something along these lines. And, you know, what the NFL does, too, I think to come in, you brought up the NFL here. It's much different when you're talking about the number of teams and franchises in the NFL with a roster of 53 guys as opposed to the hundreds under the NCAA umbrella with Division II, Division III, the big boys, the group of five and all that stuff, and 85 scholarships on each team. So it is football in terms of, hey, it's 100 yards and here's the pigskin and we're going to play 60 minutes and all that stuff. But in terms of the process and what happens in the stands and how the game's played, Wes, they may be two totally separate animals, even though it's the word football.
Here's the other idea that, well, other thought I had. I wouldn't say it's an idea per se. What happens, and again, this is all speculation, and I understand we're swimming in the pool of speculation a little bit on this, right? And let's say we get to the fall, and in September, it's one way in one state, and in October, it's another way. I mean, for instance, you know, what does that do for schools like, you know, I'm sure you saw the story, but as much as you read about the University of Iowa stopping season ticket sales for 2020 because they're not entirely sure exactly kind of how, you know, 2020 is going to play out. Well, let's say Todd Stansbury and Georgia Tech have these four models that were referred to in the article that Ken Segura had in the AJC. Well, then all of a sudden, let's say model one is, you know, their first home game. Well, by the time they get around to playing Notre Dame at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in October, are they dealing with another model? If so, that opens the door. And Pac, what about the revenues involved in some of this? The revenue streams involved in some of this could be completely different, right? I mean, that's the other part about this, right? You're starting to think about the financial end of it, and I'm certainly health and safety is the number one priority here. But your revenues in September might be one thing. Your revenues in October might be the other. Right. And if you're an athletic department like a Georgia Tech, a Wake Forest, some of these other schools, yeah, Power Five is considered to be the more financially rich of all college athletics. But still, revenues count and ticket revenues and concessions. Plus, not only revenues, the cost of hosting those games and the health and safety protection that has to go into play.
Well, the movers and shakers in college athletics, from commissioners to athletic directors to even coaches, are going to have to be flexible, right? We're talking about the flexibility right now in terms of different plans that every AD is looking at. You know who else needs to be flexible? Fans. And we have, you know, all been through it. We've all been through it here since March, since the pandemic has hit. You've had to change your way of living. And I think that if you're being realistic, and this is not even the crystal ball, what August and September and October might look like, I think you as a fan need to have the mindset of flexibility that, you know what, this is going to be different. This whole year has been unlike anything any of us have experienced. So you just got to assume, knock on wood, that we're going to have a season, because I am still optimistic that we're definitely going to have a season. When and how long, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But as a fan, I think you've got to have the mindset that you're going to have to be flexible. This is not going to be the typical, hey, I pull into the same tailgate spot, I got the same amount of people around me, I'm going to go walk into a full stadium, elbow to elbow. This is going to be different. And if it turns out, much like the states have opened up in phases 1, 2, and 3, hey, you have to put that thing in reverse if we have another wave. And again, I'm not going to give you the gloom and doom because that's not where I'm going on this. But I just think the fan, much like the athletic director and the commissioner, need to understand that, you know what, this is going to be a different year, even if we get all 12 regular season games in. But your flexibility has got to be something that you just better get it in your mind that, hey, that's just the way it's going to be. Maybe we don't go to every game this year because of what you just said. So, I mean, you just got to be prepared for everything at this point in time, Wes, because we just don't have anything that's a guaranteed lock at this point in time.
I think that's the best way to handle it. You know, we talked about flexibility, and I think it's going to be a critical piece here as we get closer and closer to this. The other part, by the way, that I will add, how many times have you been asked about going to games? How many times have you been asked about tailgating?
Well, I get asked that question a lot, even if we're 2 months prior to kickoff, because there'll be folks that go, hey, man, we need to get together, grill out something. I'm like, well, you know, life's a little different right now. So, but you're right. I mean, the whole process of your Saturday for a college football weekend, again, if you're a season ticket holder, you're a fan, you expect to go to a couple games like you normally do, even if you're not a season ticket holder, you've got to have the mindset right now that, you know what, this year is going to be different. I may not have that opportunity just because of what we're having to deal with. I just think all of us need to hope and pray that we're going to have a season, whether we have 20 people in the stands or 150,000 people in the stands. You're just going to have to understand this year is going to be different. Already has been.
Yeah, absolutely. And 2020 is going to be very, very unique in that light. And I don't think anybody is surprised to hear about the National Football League potentially, referring to whatever the state guidelines are. And I think that makes sense from an ownership perspective, and certainly from a franchise perspective, as important as those franchises are to their respective communities and states. The college football thing is a little trickier because, and I'll just give you an example here quickly. Let's say that the guidelines in Kentucky are one way when NC State visits Louisville to open the season. And then the next week when Louisville goes to Clemson, right, Pac? We talked about this yesterday. Let's say the guidelines are completely different. And all of a sudden, you know, South Carolina, it might be near capacity, half capacity, whatever, whereas Cardinal Stadium might have been, I don't know, a third full, maybe nobody in early September. Hard to tell. But nonetheless, I think that's one of the concepts you have to understand is that the schedule falls. And I was on the text chain with you guys and Josh and Drew last night about, you know, what if Virginia Tech in North Carolina is one way in Chapel Hill, and yet Virginia Tech plays an important ball game in Blacksburg and it's another way? Well, guess what? That's just the way it's going to be in 2020. Depending on how the states regulate this. And here's the other thing I'll add on this. You know, in the state of Georgia, Governor Brian Kemp is a huge college football fan. He's a graduate of the University of Georgia. He is all about college athletics and doing this the right way. I guess we can assume Ron DeSantis in Florida is as well, because he had the press conference at, what, Miami's indoor facility a couple of weeks ago, right? We know that Roy Cooper in North Carolina is. You know, you're going to have to check the temperature of your particular governor in your state, to be honest with you. I think that's going to be something that people are going to want to follow in the month of August. Okay, so how's our governor think? You know, what's the governor's thinking? What's the health, chief medical officer of the state, that type thing? What are they thinking as we get closer to kickoff? Because really, that's going to be part of the evaluation process as to who all is going to the games and maybe how you're going, how many are going.
Well, not to bring politics into it, because I don't want to go politics, but here in the great state of North Carolina, the Republican National Convention was going to be held 5 minutes right down the street from my house. And the governor said, hey, you know what, we just can't have that many people congregating in one spot. And guess what? That thing is now gone. So I don't want to sit here and crystal ball in June what we think August and September and October are going to look like. This thing is so fluid. It changes from an hour standpoint. We've seen it now with schools across the country in terms of testing, shutting down situations. I mentioned Boise State yesterday about this time. They shut down the whole school this week, which includes their voluntary football program and practices and all that stuff. I mean, we talked about Clemson and their 23 guys. We talked about Kansas State shutting it down. LSU's got 30 guys in quarantine. Everybody's different. States are different. So I suspect that, you know what, as we move forward, that will be the case not only around the country, but also within an ACC football footprint with 10 different states operating 10 different ways. So, again, it's a complex issue, but as a fan of a sport that you hope, number one, we have the season, and number two, you got to understand that, you know what, there may be some scenarios where it's not exactly like it always used to be. And that's just the way it is, Wes. That's how it is.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Wes, we're going to have a serious baseball slant for the rest of the hour. You mentioned Patrick Bailey's going to join us coming up in about half an hour. The number one first-round draft pick from the beloved San Francisco Giants, NC State.
Wait. Beloved to you.
Right. Well, beloved, period. America's team, San Francisco Giants.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Well, I mean, Joey Bart, Buster Posey. I mean, it's like all the great ACC stars just want to go to San Francisco. It's just the way it works. Well, but that's coming up
in
half an hour.
Make sure that when Brian, Yeah, make sure when Brian O'Connor joins us, you always talk to, make sure he's aware that, you know, he's talking to the pseudo manager, general manager, and owner of the San Francisco Giants.
Right. Well, let's bring on the head baseball coach of your University of Virginia at Wahoos now, the Cavs. Coach, I'm just going to throw this bad boy up here right here to start this interview because this is sweet right here, my man. Sweet.
Yeah, I love it. That was, as you know, that was the movie that came out this winter about our national championship team and our baseball program. So proud of that. Certainly excited about our 5-year anniversary of our championship today.
Does it seem like yesterday, Brian, or not in this time?
Well, I'll tell you, Wes, during this time, it just seems like every day is crawling along, you know, certainly in this coronavirus time, it just seems like time slows down. And, you know, I was just remarking earlier that when we had that movie premiere of that movie, when it came out, that was about 6 months ago. But I'll tell you, it seems like it was 4 years ago. It's just time's crawling along. And I'm excited to get through this summer and get our players back and get all of our students back and get back and hopefully to get back to some normalcy here, but we'll see how it goes.
You mentioned time just crawling along. Every baseball coach I've spoken to, whether it be ACC related or not, has talked about 2020, like how unbelievable, out of nowhere the season ends. It wasn't one of those things you said, well, you know, 2 weeks from now, guys, we got to take care of business because, you know, the season ends. I'm curious to hear your story of when you heard and how you handled that with your team and how difficult that was.
Well, certainly it was really challenging, Mark. It was challenging for everybody, every team in college baseball, every sport that was playing a spring sport. I mean, you think about the basketballs that were competing in a championship, and here it comes to an abrupt end. But, you know, we were off to a great start in the season. We were about 14-4. Mm. We were actually on a bus headed to the University of Pittsburgh for an ACC series, a second ACC series. We had played NC State the weekend before. And so we were on the bus on the way. Our athletic director, Carla Williams, called me on my cell phone and asked where I was at, where the team was at. And we were actually had stopped for lunch on the way to Pittsburgh. And she had just said to hold tight. There were some things happening. An hour later, she called and said that we needed to turn the bus around, that we were coming back home. We were not going to play that series against Pitt. But I'll tell you, on the 2 hours on the way back, Mark, to grounds here at the university, between that time Carla Williams had called and the time we got back, the college baseball season was canceled, right? So that 2 hours, there was just a lot going on, and certainly difficult for everybody. And, you know, with the next day, we met as a team, shared the plan with the team as we knew it at that point in time. And then from that point on, it was over. You know, I told our guys to go home and that we would contact them. And so we've been kind of handling everything day by day, week by week since.
Wow. And then you go back 5 years where you're celebrating this unbelievable moment for your program, the university, and quite frankly, Brian, the ACC. Because it had been since Wake Forest in the 50s that an ACC team had captured a College World Series. And here we are, you know, celebrating the fifth anniversary of just a remarkable, remarkable Virginia team. And you get to the championship bracket, if you will, in Omaha, and you guys lost game one to Vanderbilt. And I got to be curious. I know how, as good as Josh Spores was in that series and all these other guys you had that were a big part of that title run, what was it like playing game two, let alone game three? Because to me, in the best of three that I now have in the championship bracket, if you fall behind in game one, I mean, the odds just get a lot thinner, it seems like.
Well, it does, and it certainly has since the year that we moved in college baseball to the three-game series. As you recall, it used to be once you got to that title game, it was no matter if you didn't have a loss or not, it was a one game take right. all. And, you know, we switched a number of years ago. And so there hasn't been many times that series has went three games. But I'll tell you, we had a little bit of experience with it because the year before in 2014, we had lost the first game to Vanderbilt as well, won game two, and then it came down to a decisive game three. So, you know, we knew we had been there before. Certainly you don't want to lose that first one. But the key was in that game two, Adam Haseley, our center fielder, started the game on the mound. He won. He pitched five innings, pitched great baseball, and then Josh Spores came in through the final four innings, which then didn't allow Spores to be available for game three. So we had to throw a little bit of a wrinkle in there, knowing that Spores wasn't able to close the game. That's where Nathan Kirby entered the game in the eighth inning to close the game out in game three.
We have talked about this a lot this week, Coach. Omaha has not necessarily been kind to the ACC. The league has had unbelievably great teams for decades upon decades upon decades. And the fact that we're celebrating the five-year anniversary of the Hoos taking care of business, it is hard to believe that you can go from Wake Forest of 1955 to Virginia of 2015, and with all the incredible teams in between, nobody's been able to figure out Omaha. I know it's special, and good things have to happen to be a national championship team. Why do you think that is in a league that has been so good in baseball?
Well, I tell you, I can't explain it, because you're exactly right. There's been some incredible baseball teams in this league in the 17 years that I've been in the league, and then certainly prior. I remember some of those Florida State teams when I was a youngster living in Omaha and going to games and seeing those teams play, and the fact that it hadn't been done is, can't explain it. But I'll say this. I was sharing this with somebody the other day. There's a lot of teams that even never, great programs that never get to Omaha. There's a lot of great programs that, never play for the championship in Omaha. So it's really difficult, but I'll tell you, you'd alluded to it that, and I've seen this in going back during this COVID time, watching some of the replays of the game, how much you have to be good, you have to be talented, but you have to have some good fortune too. You know, those games a lot of times come down to one play. And if that one play or that one swing of the bat or that one pitch changes, you don't have a championship, nor do you have a chance to compete for one. So it's tough, but it's hard to explain. I'm hoping over the next decade or so, our league, with a lot of great coaches, a lot of great programs that are passionate about their baseball teams, I'm hoping we can change our fortune there in Omaha.
You know, Brian, it's interesting you bring up fortune because, and you're exactly right. I mean, as good as you are and as talented as you are, and you've seen it in this conference for sure in your tenure since replacing Dennis Womack years ago. I mean, it's remarkable the level of talent in this league and the level of talent on teams. I mean, you were talking about the change in format, and I mentioned this to Mark on yesterday's show. 1994, Danny Hall's first year at Georgia Tech, they had that unbelievable team with Veritek and Garcia Parra and Peyton and Brad Rigby on the mound, and they blow through the double elimination bracket and then lose to Oklahoma in the winner-take-all game. How many times do we see Florida State there? How many times Mike Fox went back-to-back like you did? I mean, it's just remarkable. Then counter to that, you get the Pack and I were in Pinehurst last year watching Mike Martin beat LSU to advance to the College World Series. I mean, it's interesting how fortunate and luck you got to have kind of in your back pocket along the way, isn't it?
It sure is. I mean, first of all, you got to be good, right? You have to have talent. And then I also believe, Wes, that there's something to having played in Omaha, having the experience of having been there, right? And your players understanding the difference Omaha is from the regular season. The crowds, the fans, the length of the tournament. You know, nowadays, if you're there and you play in the championship, you're there for 2 weeks. And how you manage that with your men on your team and keep them on the task at hand, although enjoying the World Series, is something that needs to be navigated and figured out a little bit. And so certainly you have to have talent. You have to understand and realize what it takes to win in Omaha and stay there and be successful. And then, you know, there's just that thing of good fortune, right? That there's a pitcher that always steps up. There's a player that steps up. Thomas Woodruff, a walk-on player for us for 4 years, steps up in game two in 2015 and gets three hits, right? And Thomas Woodruff, he didn't play at all for us for 3 years, right? And that's his moment that he emerges, and if he doesn't do that, we don't win a championship. So it's little things like that have to happen.
Brian, I need to do this as an advanced scout. Who on the current roster, and I'll even include guys that are going to get ready to become on the roster in the 21 season, as future San Francisco Giants, who should I be looking forward to seeing in the orange and black?
Well, I'll tell you first and foremost, I know your next guest, Patrick Bailey, you got to be excited about him. I think Patrick's a great player. I was fortunate enough to coach him on Team USA 2 years ago. He was one of our catchers, and he's a great addition. But I'll tell you, we've got a lot of them. I'll tell you, with the changes in the draft, guys, where, you know, so many more players are coming to school, so many more players are returning, the extra year of eligibility, the Cavaliers are a lot like every other team out there. Everybody's pretty loaded up for next year in the college baseball season, so I'm excited about it. But I'll tell you, you have your choices, Mark. You got a left-handed pitcher, Andrew Abbott, that I believe is outstanding. Griff McGarry, another pitcher, and Mike Vassell, and a number of position players. Our left side of the infield will be a veteran left side of the infield next year, and Zach Geloff and Nick Kent, they'll be both juniors next year. So, you know, the Cavaliers are going to look a lot like other college baseball programs. We're going to be experienced and, I believe, pretty talented in 2021.
Hey, Pac, by the way, you know what happens when you're the head coach of the national champions? You get the biggest ring, by the way. Brian O'Connor's got a ring today that is bigger than everybody else's. Show us that ring. Look at that ring, Pac. That ring is huge.
Holy mackerel. You know what? That kind of it reminds me of the 2014 World Series championship rings out in San Francisco.
Oh my gosh.
Very similar.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God! Actually, by the way,
you can't fit them on your finger,
right, Brian? That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, full disclosure, it's a paperweight.
You know,
okay, good.
When you collect them like you do jelly beans, man, you know, after a while they all kind of look the same, you know. But, you know, the last one's always the biggest one. That's the one. That's the thing I absolutely know. The last one's the biggest one.
Well, I tell you guys, I'm hoping that there's another one in our future. That's what we're working towards. But we're mighty proud of this one. That's for sure.
Should be. Very cool.
Hey, Brian. Happy anniversary. Great to have you with us. And stay well, my man. Always good to catch up, and we wish you all the best, okay?
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. You all stay safe, and we'll see you down the road. Thank you.
Look forward to it. Brian O'Connor's the head baseball coach, University of Virginia. Five-year anniversary of the Cavaliers National Championship in Omaha when they beat Vanderbilt.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Packer and Durham, Wednesday. A lot of baseball this hour. Brian O'Connor, you just heard from, University of Virginia. We mentioned Patrick Bailey, NC State catcher, on his way to winning multiple World Series championships out in the Bay Area. He'll be coming up here in about 10, 15 minutes. We look forward to that. But Wes, you preface going to break a story that's brewing in Tallahassee, and this is taking place at a lot of institutions around the country where folks are doing a double take and doing some heavy reading in terms of what in the world do you name buildings or stadiums or arenas or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and this is in Florida, where in Tallahassee, the legacy of Doak Campbell, Doak S. Campbell, who was the former president at Florida State University. In fact, you need to know that Doak Campbell was the president when it went from the Florida State College for Women and became a co-educational institution. There is some reporting going on, not only by ESPN.com's Andrea Adelson, who will join us later, but also the Palm Beach Post and the Tallahassee paper talking about that legacy. Now, the legacy of Campbell was Kendrick Scott, a former linebacker at Florida State, started a petition asking for the name to come down over Campbell's pro-segregation views while serving as university president. Now, you go back to the you know, you go back to newspaper accounts, and Campbell was against the admission of black students on campus. And an article in the Tampa Morning Tribune in 1957 discussed his opposition to white students attending desegregation meetings, Mark. And that information now is coming back up in the last couple of weeks. And it also goes back to former Florida State football player Freddie Stevenson, who brought it back up on Twitter. Kendrick Lewis got the petition started, and it's left the Campbell family. His grandson, Doak Campbell III, is a former mayor in Boca Raton for 6 years, who served three terms. And he said that he's defended his grandfather by talking about, in his discussions with his grandfather, he did not want the white students to attend the segregation meetings because of the health and well-being, and was afraid of the conflict and potential violence and whatever that could happen. Again, this is happening, as you said a moment ago, at a lot of campuses around the country. We're seeing a lot of landmarks in our country come down because of what they represent. Some for the right reasons. Some it's a little more in depth, and it requires a lot of study. And it's going to be interesting because there are certain policies and procedures in place in a variety of states that this kind of stuff has to be reviewed and then put in front of committees and things like that. I don't know where this is going to end up, but it is certainly a topic that is front burner as it relates to Florida State University. I don't think there's any question about that.
Well, here's the other thing. This, again, is not one of those one-size-fit-all deals. Everybody who gets called out and says, hey, listen, when there needs to be a change, you have to do what is in your best interest. What worked at school X may not work at school Y. These are all separate cases. And I know Florida State's president basically said, we're not going to dismiss this. We're going to take a look at this and do our due diligence, and they should. And if there's enough people that are upset by it, you better pay attention. Again, we just had this situation with President Clements on at Clemson University the other day, and there were enough people that were saying, hey, there needs to be a change with the Calhoun Honors College and Tillman Hall, that should be changed. Well, guess what? They did their due diligence. He talked about how many years they've been working on it, much less just becoming a storyline in the last couple of weeks. So, again, what Florida State does with this, it will be tag, you're it. You have to figure this one out. But to think that this is an isolated case, you would be wrong. There are demands all over the country. I go to the University of Texas. Their student athletes just recently said, hey, there's a number of buildings and monuments on campus that need to be changed, not to mention other demands and things that they would think need to be kicked around. So, again, what Florida State does with its West, I don't know the answer to that, but this is going to happen on multiple campuses. It already has, and I suspect that given the momentum and the lay of the land right now that we're going through with the racial unrest in this country, that there's going to be many more coming down the road here in the next couple months that really smart people are going to have to figure this out. But they need to do their due diligence and not just say no or, hey, yeah, just take it down. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people involved making these decisions.
Well, and you've talked about this, the activism energy involved in this movement has been impressive, especially as it relates to student athletes. And I know you talked about this on your afternoon show on Sirius XM that the young man who's a football player in the state of Mississippi said he will not play in Mississippi if the flag remains the same, right? I mean, there's all sorts of different dynamics in play. This one is interesting in the sense that there is some defense coming from the family on it. You know, Doak Campbell and his administration at Florida State and the coeducational integration of the school, at the same time, racial segregation going on in Florida. There was a student movement to attend some of those. He you know, prohibited that. They've got the relationship, Mark, and we've talked about this, the very, very solid relationship from all accounts of the Seminole tribe. I mean, there's a lot of different interesting factors in place here just with Florida State, period, and their history. And now seemingly this one's been brought to the surface. And you're right, Dr. John Thrasher, the president, who's had plenty on his plate, now has this on his plate, as does their very outstanding and longstanding board of trustees as well.
Yeah, you just have to have a good handle on, number one, the facts, as usual, and number two, you got to have a handle on your fan base, too. And, you know, we're sitting here talking about a Florida State situation. We've seen a sport like NASCAR go through the same kind of deal in terms of the Confederate flag and so forth. So there were a lot. Again, we are living in very interesting times And I understand that delicate balance between history and what makes sense, right? I mean, that sometimes can be very confusing and difficult. So this is not – Florida State's not the only one in this boat, and that's kind of where we're going on this thing, and it will be interesting to see where they do moving forward on this.
Packer and Durham.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
West Durham, during the break, I have gotten into the necessary outfit to introduce our next guest because he is the next big star of my San Francisco Giants from NC State. Patrick Bailey joins us. Patrick, how are you?
I'm good. You're looking good in that.
Let me tell you something. Just for you, because you and Joey Bart, Georgia Tech star, he's gotten a head start. I am expecting big things from you in San Francisco, and I don't do this for anybody, because I brought out my 2010 World Series San Francisco Giants, and it's cream. Remember, it's not white, it's cream. But here's what else we got going on, Patrick. I don't do this for anybody. Not one World Series 2010, World Series 2012, World Series 2014. So that was last decade with three World Series titles. So when you get out to the Bay Area, you, Joey Bart, and the rest of the crew, I'm expecting big things from ACC dudes bringing the Giants back to glory.
Yes, sir. Can't wait.
Now, I can't wait. Let's do it, baby. I know you've had the red and white of NC State, but let me tell you what else you're going to need to do. You need to get your orange, brother. You need to get your orange, all right? So you're dealing with a San Francisco Giants lunatic, and we got you back. That's all good news. Wes, it's all yours.
Well, thanks. I mean, Patrick, aren't you glad you were drafted by the Giants and not maybe, say, the Dodgers?
Hey, one more thing, Patrick. You need to know something. You need to know this. This is important because I know NC State, North Carolina, that Tobacco Road robbery, hey, it's intense. But, my man, you got to understand something. The Dodgers are bad news. It's been 11,570 days, 11,570, since they could walk around with a hat with World Series champions on it. So I'm counting on you to turn this thing around. All right, no pressure.
All right. Patrick, what's this all been like? Because you got off to such an unbelievable start, and then – you know, baseball got shut down along with all the other spring sports in the ACC and nationally on the collegiate level. And then all of a sudden you were kind of left to this unknown about what was going to happen. And yet seemingly it all worked out for you. So what was it like?
Sink in at first with everything getting shut down. And then kind of everybody started going home from campus. And that's when it kind of like, dang, like, you know, I might never play with these guys again. You know, hopefully I do down the road. But, you know, a lot of the games that we played just this year could be my last with a lot of the teammates. And, you know, that was probably one of the best things about college is just the relationships you build with those guys in the locker room and cutting up and all that. And then, you know, fortunate, it kind of went by pretty quick that time from, you know, getting canceled to now. And at the time, I didn't think it was going to go by fast at all. But, you know, I was fortunate it has. And, you know, looking forward to the next step with the Giants.
Patrick, draft night, how exciting was that? I mean, did you have any idea? I mean, you had to figure, hey, first round's got a chance here. But when the phone rang, kind of walk us through that. That had to be just an incredible experience.
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, I can't explain the emotions that me, my family, my fiance had that night. You know, it was just surreal. It kind of goes into the next couple of days of just that adrenaline rush. And, you know, just you're pretty much talking with teams two or three picks before and trying to make deals and whatnot. And, you know, it just goes by so quick. And, You know, it's really a special moment and very stressful moment too, but you know, I'm glad it's done now.
Patrick, when you think about what college baseball provided you, a platform, I mean, obviously NC State had a great program. Elliott's done remarkable work there for so many years, and you played with talented guys who are going to go on and play professional baseball. Do you have to almost let yourself live in that moment, like you were talking about a moment ago? It might be the last time you play with those guys. You have to always kind of live in that moment and not worry so much about what potentially might happen, like being the first-round pick of the San Francisco Giants?
Yeah. I mean, I think as a, you know, baseball player, getting to play so much during a season, you kind of have to take it day by day. And I think that's what makes a game so great is, you know, you can have an 0-for-4 night with a couple punch-outs and wake up the next day and you got a new game. And you just kind of tackle it that way. And kind of to go into your question, it's kind of the same way is, you know, you enjoy those relationships you have in the moment. And, you know, that's why I feel like tears always come at the end of the season. And it's a shame it didn't happen this year. I don't feel whether they were happy or sad. It's, you know, it's just crazy to have, you know, your whole year and of working and building relationships with your teammates and, you know, potentially could be the, you know, last time you play with them. And, you know, like, you just take it day by day and enjoy the moments while you can.
You know, it is kind of interesting, and I don't say this as a San Francisco Giants lunatic fringe, but the ACC and the catcher position with the Giants has really been remarkable. Buster Posey, obviously an incredible career, comes from Florida State. Joey Bartle, I mentioned, from Georgia Tech, is certainly up in the ranks, and now you get drafted in the first round by the Giants. There's something about ACC catchers and the Giants, apparently.
Yeah, I can't, you know, I can't wait to get to meet Buster and Joey. You know, it's fun to watch Joey play in my freshman year and kind of see what he did. And, you know, I really look forward to kind of learning from those guys and, you know, seeing what I can add to my game and just continue to develop throughout the system.
Patrick, I don't know how that process unfolded and all the teams that we're talking to and organizations and so forth, but I heard the night of the draft that one of the reasons you were so attractive to the Giants in combination with Joey Bart from a year or so ago was the fact that there is some belief, whether it happens or not, that there will be a universal DH in baseball and that having two high-level catchers is, quite frankly, better than having one. I mean, let's be honest. Did any of that conversation come about in their visits with you?
Yeah, I mean, we had conversations before the draft, and it was pretty much, you know, our philosophy is we're going to take the best available player. And, you know, I guess at 13, I was that guy and fortunate to be that guy. And so, you know, I don't really think too much into that. We'll let them figure it out. Hopefully I just play the way I can play and, you know, force them into playing me somewhere, whether it's catcher, DH, hopefully, or, you know, wherever I need to be.
How about your partner, teammate getting picked up by the Giants, too? That's going to be pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, it was fun to kind of see the next day of him going through that and, you know, texting back and forth before he got picked and then, like, hey, like, Giants are coming up and, you know, he gets picked and, yeah, it was a really, really fun moment. Can't wait to keep playing with him and catching him. It's going to be fun.
So what's the next step now, Patrick? Because there's a lot of uncertainty about baseball, period. Especially at the major league level, and even more uncertainty to a degree with reduction of minor league franchises and things of that nature.
I agree with
them. What are you waiting on? What are you doing besides hanging out on the farm and being around Greensboro?
Yeah, so we're actually in Raleigh right now.
He's right.
But we, yeah, I think the next step is going out to Arizona and getting a physical and, you know, signing and whatnot, and then, you know, after that, I don't know. You know, your guess is as good as mine, and hopefully, yeah, I've got a pretty good setup here in Raleigh to work out and stay in shape and do what I need to do. For whenever the call comes, I'll be ready to go. But yeah, I'm just trying to take advantage of every day possible and just kind of see what happens.
Patrick, have you ever been to the ballpark in San Francisco?
I haven't. I've never been to California, so I'm hoping to get there soon.
Dude, you are in for a treat. I'm telling you, when you get there, your eyeballs are going to pop out. It is absolutely sensational.
I can't wait.
All right. Before we let you go, we got to tell you that Elliott Avent has been one of our favorites since this program started on radio. And I think I've known him long enough to have a handful, if not two handfuls, of Elliot Avent stories. What's Patrick Bailey's favorite Elliot Avent story?
Oh, goodness. I don't know if you can narrow it down or if it's appropriate on live television. But, no, I mean, he's been amazing, and, you know, be able to play for him for 2.5 years and, you know, the care and effort that he puts into the players is unmatched. And, you know, I can't thank him enough for giving me the opportunity to be a Wolfpacker. And, you know, he'd be one of the first guys I'd ever call if I was in trouble, and knowing that he would come in a heartbeat. You know, I can't say enough good things about Coach Jay, though.
Well, listen, one more thing. I've got three of them, my man. I'm waiting for one more. You're going to lead the way, all right? Rooting for you.
All right. Sounds good.
Hey, Patrick, stay well. We look forward to seeing you in the big leagues, and thanks for spending time with us.
The next great player from San Francisco, from the ACC. Get ready for it. Patrick Bailey. Coming to a Hall of Fame near you, Wes Durham. It's what we're talking about. Giants baseball right there.
I just cannot continue to stress how important it was that he was not drafted by the LA Dodgers.
11,570 days, Wes. I mean, who wants to play for those guys? They don't win anything. Doesn't matter if the season's 60 games or 162. You know, it gets to October. Oh. Things get a little tight down there in La La Land. Just telling you, man. Got to be able to bring it home. We look forward to watching Patrick, though. He's a big-time player, and we wish him and everybody from the ACC that was drafted the very best as they move forward in the Major League Baseball world.
By the way, fresh off the draft where you wore the hat, by the way, the next day, and we had fun with that graphic, to now where you almost assumed the role of Bud Black. That was nice to see you assume the role of Bud Black as you interviewed Patrick Bailey. It looked like you were the manager of the team.
No, not the manager, but that was a real jersey. I am not a jersey guy, as you well know, because I gave all my Bobcat gear away to your son. But that jersey, though, I think I have three jerseys, and they're all legit. They were the real deal, and that's it for me. But when the Giants won it all in 2010, Edgar Renteria went yard to put it over the top. Lincecum closed the deal with Brian Wilson. I had to go get my Giants the real jersey, that 2010 World Series deal. It's hard to believe it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, you always got a chance for another one, right?
Well, we got Patrick Bailey. Got Buster Posey, Joey Bart. Again, it's the ACC factor. The ACC factor in San Fran.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.